This week on Barbell Shrugged, we interview Carl Pauly, movement dude.
Hey, this is Rich Froning. You're listening to Barbell Shrugged. For the video version, go to barbellshrugged.com.
Don't be nervous.
Welcome to Barbell Shrugged. I'm Mike Blitzer here with Doug Larson, Christopher Moore, CTP behind the camera, of course. And we have our guest, Professor Carl Pauly. We're calling him that because we are at Princeton University, and this dude is professing some shit.
That's right. Here.
Yeah.
Professing. I like that. You know, I barely graduated college.
We were saying
it's a good way
thing.
To start the show.
Yeah. But now you're speaking at an Ivy League school, so that's kind of cool.
I feel special, very academic.
Did you also have the thought, like, why am I being asked to come? I could never have gotten into this institution.
Actually, you know, kind of tricked into coming. No, I came because I wanted to come, and especially because it was an endurance summit, and I'm definitely not an endurance athlete, but being able to speak to people that have nothing to do with gymnastics or even strength and conditioning, I'm all about it.
Well, like, it's funny because a lot of endurance athletes, they do get into strength and conditioning a little bit, but then the whole gymnastics thing, that's like a whole nother step removed.
Totally. Totally. So it's a, you know, people associate me with gymnastics, but I'm definitely not a gymnast. And
he's also a pretty face.
I was thinking the same joke, dude.
Oh, God. Oh, God. I'm always trying to be, you know, a little bit more thug. Can you say that?
Oh, yeah. I'm always working on my
off amazingly well. You are so thug.
My street cred quotient. I'm always looking to amplify that.
All right, dude. First off, you're in the wrong city to be pulling off thug.
I know.
You need to come to Memphis. I'll put you in the right spot for a week. You may never come back, but we'll get the thug.
I may get the cred.
Somebody as cute as you walking through some neighborhoods?
I'm sweating right now. I don't know why I got so hot.
Before we go any further, this is the longest little intro. Go to barbellshrug.com.
We should start the show.
Sign up for the newsletter, and we will inform you of all the cool stuff. You might have, if you were signed up for the newsletter, you would know we were at Princeton University and we were going to speak. And we were all invited. Me, Doug, Chris, Carl. We got Nate over here. Nate Helming, people.
I'm here because of Nate, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, he's an endurance genius, from what I understand.
Yep.
Running philosopher? Is that what we're calling you now? Running philosopher.
Yeah, you can't ever shave that beard with that name, though. So you got to keep the beard. Yeah.
Keep that beer.
Yeah, but we were all invited, and I was like, Princeton University? Like, there's it's the National Endurance Sports Summit. The organization is Elevate Endurance. Check out elevateendurance.org if you want to check out what these guys are doing. This is the first year they're putting it on. They asked us, and at first I was like, Princeton? That's weird that we got asked to go speak there. And then I saw the lineup of people talking, and I was like, wow, this is a real honor. Like,
it's diverse.
To not just be at the school talking, but then also with those people. So it's a really solid lineup. I'm pretty happy about it. I'm really excited. Yeah, I'm not in the endurance community either.
We were all saying the same thing.
Clearly.
Like, how did I get invited? And I saw Carl, and I was like, well, the gymnastics dude.
If Carl got invited, well then.
But it's like the three of us and Carl aren't endurance guys, and everyone else
definitely
is like,
but that's the point.
They've done 100-mile races and stuff. And,
I was telling Carl, man, like last time we talked about it, the magic happens when we all care about the same stuff, like the same kind of ideas, and we come from diverse backgrounds. We mix together in one room. That's when new insights happen. Like it happened with us last time. I think when you talk your perspective with a room full of endurance athletes, they're all going to see the same things from new perspectives. Everybody's going to improve, you know?
Exactly. And I think that's what I'm coming here to do. It's not to get people to understand my techniques or approaches to training. It's more just getting them to think about it slightly different. And if I get these people thinking, then I will have done my job. And I think that's easy to do. And I was telling Nate, I'm like, it doesn't matter how much we mess up today. If we just continue to deliver the message that we've been delivering, because it's slightly a different audience, especially for me, then it will be a good day.
Yeah.
So do you consider yourself less of a gymnastics coach and more of a movement coach, really? Or how do you think about yourself?
The movement philosopher. Weren't you there for the last podcast?
No, he's the running philosopher.
He's a running philosopher.
How many philosophers in
the
room?
Carl make his own category.
No, we did it last time.
I know, we did. I was kind of like the movement philosopher, I think. I'm definitely not a gymnastics coach. Why not? Movement dude. Movement dude. I don't know. I don't know. People ask me all the time, like, what do you do? I'm like, I don't really know, but I go and talk to people, inspire people.
I don't know how to respond to the same question either.
Right?
Maximize human potential. I inspire where darkness reigns. I bring my light and help other people see what they may bring to the world. There you
he
should have
written the intro to your book.
I only got Kelly Starrett to write it.
Well, you know who to get next time. Damn, yeah. Kelly.
Huge mistake.
I can say whatever bullshit you need to write, I'm your man. I can make up anything.
I think I figured that one out now. But but it comes from a good place, and that's what I appreciate.
It does, Carl.
Yes, I feel it.
It comes
I
from
feel
a,
it.
A point of love.
I feel like you look amazing, though.
Thank you. You trying to get my pants or what?
No.
Oh, by the way, I got send my wife a nice picture later. I told her I would get some nice flattering picture. You would send her a little message. You can do whatever you want.
Oh, cool.
The sexier, the more encouraging, the better. But yeah, I've been since we last met. I've been rocking the protocol.
That's amazing.
I want to tell you two things that it might sound a little dramatic, but shit actually changed my physical existence. I've made two huge changes in my approach to training. One is I quit worrying about weight in the squat, especially the front squat, Doug. I was like, look at Doug's squat. This guy's beautiful when he squats. I got to be less ugly when I front squat. So I took all the weight off. I said, I'm going to work on time instead of load. So I started sitting in the bottom and making posture the most important thing in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And then come to find out, I added like 150 pounds to my front squat like in a month.
Oh, wow.
Because mechanics just aligned. All of a sudden, my spine's like, oh, yeah, it'll be easier if we just like stayed stacked, right? I learned to get my butt underneath my spine, and I could squat the weight all of a sudden. And then it was the handstand holds.
Wow.
Wall walks and handstand holds changed. Like that changed posture from the top down, and the front squat fixed everything else.
That's
yeah, when
crazy.
We left, it wasn't like, oh, I did the handstand. I'll never do it again. It was like 2 days later, there's videos out of his garage of him like shivering.
At 285.
Upside down. I saw. I was very impressed. I was like, holy crap.
And
he actually
do
took
it, easily.
It seriously.
But see, at the time I was about 289, I'd
he
say.
Changed his life, Carl.
What about
this man thought he'd never get upside down, and he's been upside down on and off for a year now.
On my, we talked
never done a handstand,
but you did it so easily.
On my podcast, like 2 days before, I was like, "Yeah, I'm coming to see Carl. You know, maybe he'll have me do handstands. Fuck that shit. It's so stupid." I said it. Like, that was my loudmouth perspective, bold, brash perspective just before meeting you.
That's crazy.
And then as soon as your hands left my waist, I was like, handstands are awesome.
Once I touched you.
Once you touched me. The Midas touch. But I'm not, one is like, yeah, it was fun as hell. And it was a really cool experience. I got a little bit of a humble pie. But two, it was the biggest performance lesson I've learned. And like, shit, man, since I first went to Westside, Louis told me, you got to train optimally and get your ass in shape to powerlift. Don't worry just about load. It was like one of the most profound moments since that thing happened.
That's crazy. That's crazy. Yeah. Because, it's funny because I don't even know what I'm doing. I'm just doing. I'm just trying stuff. And I feed off of other people. And, you guys were joking. Let's get him upside down, this big guy. Let's see what happens.
And I did.
But you did. And you did it very quickly. And I feel like we did it in a very progressive way.
Mm-hmm.
And who knows if it was the handstand or whatever it was, but it was through that process that somehow you were able to relate to something. You're like, oh, shit, I'm missing something here. Why have I not been doing it if I actually can?
The beautiful thing was it has nothing. I think we jive on the fact that programming is awesome. We love to talk about like science, mechanics, and progressions and theory and all that because it's so a beautiful thing to discuss.
Mm-hmm.
But it comes of what actually makes hay in the world, what moves the needle forward is experiences where you connect and understand. Like a million people could explain progressions and handstand holds and I wouldn't give a shit. And maybe I'd try, maybe it would help me, maybe it wouldn't, but it was a connection. Like, here's why this is important. Here's how we can just walk through together with this thing. It was the experience that made it profoundly beneficial. Who gives a shit what the content was? It was the presentation,
I agree. That's a big one. And, I can't focus for more than 5 minutes of talking about programming. Just the thought of that makes me tired. I teach a lot and I constantly teach different progressions for different movements, of course, and I tell everyone, is like, who cares about the steps? But it's the essence of what I'm teaching you in the steps that you should remember. And if you do that, because we're all the same, we're all human beings, you're probably going to end up with similar answers than I ended up with, and eventually that will fall into a program.
So earlier you said you don't know what you're doing. Is that one of those things where, like, since you're an expert, the more you learn, the more you realize you don't know? Is that one of those things? Is that kind of what you're getting at?
I'm pausing here because I do know what I know and I know what I don't know.
What about the things you don't know? But you don't know?
That's where I'm going at. So there's this side of me that's always wanting to step it up to the next level. What is the next level? I don't know, but I'm gonna go with the flow and see where that takes me. And in terms of coaching, it's like I love coaching, but I don't necessarily care about coaching CrossFit or any kind of lifting or even gymnastics. I just care about talking to people, figuring out what is it they want to accomplish. How can we create a lifestyle that's going to be conducive for that? And that's where I don't have all the answers, but I have a pretty good understanding of how to prioritize certain things in your life that need to be there in order for you to get there. So if that's sleep, is that eating? Is that training a little bit? And then within your training, how do we prioritize that? And that's where maybe my specialty comes in, where I understand movement from this more natural side of things. It's like, oh, what's the root of why we front squat the way we do? Why is the technique performed this way? Where does it come from? And knowing that allows me to see movement not just as one thing that's happening right now, but as this continuum, and it's a constant progression. So it's almost like being able to see across this spectrum. It's not just front squatting, it's squatting mechanics. Oh, where does squatting mechanics come from? Maybe it's from when you first stood up as a kid. Mm. Let's go back to that. And then maybe in there are some answers that we can find that are going to allow me to develop.
You're like
the Freud
of movement.
There you go.
That's a big one, actually, to step up to.
So I see two patterns. I see coaches that as they get better, they get more set in their ways. And I see coaches that are the opposite, kind of maybe like Diane. Like Diane seems very open to many different perspectives. Mm-hmm. And she's like, there's no one way. It depends on what works for you. And so some coaches, as they get better, they get less set in their ways and they become more open-minded. And they realize that there's many different ways that you could get to where you want to go. And that the way I do it might not necessarily be the best way for you. Like which path do you feel like you're taking right now?
I'm definitely taking the path of not being set in my ways. And I think it's just because as a gymnast, I was always taught like, here's the technique. This is how you have to perform it. If you can't do this, you're out.
Like you get a bad score.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Right.
When in reality, yes, we're shooting for that, but I haven't reached it yet. So what should I be focusing on right now? What are other solutions? And, you know, going back to Diane Fu, for example, yes, she specializes in Olympic weightlifting, but if you look at her history as an Olympic weightlifter, it's nothing. As a coach in Olympic weightlifting, it's very minor. But what I do think she has that's very unique is that she has an open mind towards the ability to move applied to weightlifting. And she uses weightlifting as an excuse to talk about those things. Right. And yeah, so that's where I live. I live in this broader spectrum and I don't like being a specialist. I'd rather be a generalist. But once you become a generalist, you are considered a specialist. So it's quite interesting, actually.
Everyone's minds are blown.
Fantastic.
Digest that.
You know, you had...
What's up with all the open-minded coaches coming from San Francisco?
I don't know. I think it's just like it's the culture.
Vibe, it's the flowers in their hair, man.
You know, no, but everyone in the Bay Area is trying to change the world. So I guess I'm one of them.
Well, I love it. Like I just love contrast, man. I love... Mm-hmm. The fact that this is so much effective, is such a breath of fresh air, is because things have been a little, we know what we're talking about. Mm-hmm. And there are certain things you got to do to maximize your endurance or to maximize your strength, which is over here. Mm-hmm. And never the twain shall meet. And if you want to be good at one or the other, stay over here. Maybe dabble. But just in my experience, that's something that's just fucking not true. And I get there by coming to a place where I contrast what I thought was always like these tablets of stone rules and strength conditioning. I come to these type of settings and the contrast makes you see there's more to learn.
Exactly.
More to learn for sure.
You know, it's interesting because a friend of mine used to say everyone is right, everyone is wrong. Meaning, if you want to run better, go run. Like, you have to run. If you want to lift more, lift. Like, you have to lift. But then within that, you can't be stuck in this one path. And you need to understand that even though we're speaking this language of, front squatting, back squatting, overhead squatting, whatever it is, that technique, that language right there is, I don't know how to put it without offending anyone, but
offend them.
It's limited. It's a limited way of thinking. And even though we are speaking this language and saying, hey, you need to front squat, the way I talk to you about front squatting, Doug, is different than I would talk to you about it, or maybe right. to you about it. And going back to the handstand example, it's like, why would you originally care about a handstand?
I didn't.
Yeah, that's the thing. But now, all of a sudden, you're like, wait a minute, within this handstand, there was something I learned that is transferable and that matches my purpose. Now I actually care.
Yeah. I think the power of this is that, like, CTP and I have been talking about it, and he brought up at dinner earlier. I think part of the reason what makes this so magical now is that we all did come from the other side where there was so much, like, these are the rules, kid. If you want to be a gymnastics coach or a weightlifter or a strength conditioning professional, you're going to have to do it this way. Because we have these studies that were done these last 10 years. And we're not giving up this shit we've just now figured out. You come out of that and you go, there's got to be some better ways to do this, right? And you combine the essential elements you had to learn, you muscled through, and you had to see the gaps for yourself. Like, we could do this better. And that's when you get to the magical point where you can now take that and combine it with whatever you want to call that West Coast hippie vibe that we all love and admire in you, and we try to cultivate amongst ourselves. Yes, yes. Change the world combined with what the gaps you see allows you then to push the ball forward. Mm-hmm. Hope the next group learns from you, and they go, Carl's great, but fuck that guy when it comes to this thing.
Exactly.
And they're going to push your ball forward. You know?
Well, not to sell my book here, but my book is finally out. We talked about it last
time. Sell away.
But the first quote that I wrote in the book is one of my quotes, which is, don't let other people's thinking limit yours. And it was right at the beginning of my book, which basically is saying,
don't read my book.
You're about to read 450 pages here of material that I've thought about a lot and I really believe in. But at the same time, I don't want you limited by the points that I make.
Right.
And that's a big deal.
You said something a few minutes ago, which was you talked about, like, you communicate with different athletes differently.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're trying to get them to do the same thing, but you might have to, you know, say it differently to this guy than this girl or something like that. And I see that happen a lot, is coaches attacking each other.
Mm-hmm.
They go, I heard him say that to that person. That is totally wrong. I was like, yeah, but it's not what he was saying. Is what he was trying to accomplish with that person.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of things I say that are wrong, but I know that I'm just trying to get a point across to somebody, and I need them to make that change. And sometimes you got to tell them it's 10% further than it really is, because they can't feel what you want them to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and then once they feel it, then it's there. But yeah, I mean, you see that with coaches all the time too.
Right.
Like, they're criticizing each other because something's not right that they're saying, but that's how they're communicating to that one person or one group of people.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's very interesting because, you know, when I first found CrossFit, for example, I would steal every workout that I was given at San Francisco CrossFit. It was like 21-15-9 thruster pull-up. I would do that with every one of my clients the next day. Every single one of them got the same thing. And I would do that every day. And they actually started getting better. And they're like, Carl, you're a genius. And I'm like, yeah.
Thank you.
I am.
I do feel good about what I'm teaching.
Totally. And what I realized is that I wasn't teaching 21-15-9. I wasn't teaching squatting and pulling. I was teaching people the language of movement, because I spoke to every single one of my clients different that day. You know, I taught the same thing, the same prescription, but the communication, the language that we use was very much individualized. And I think that's where this concept of
the wall on the board is like, this is our roadmap.
Uh-huh.
And now I'm going to tell you how to take that map and go to where I want you to go today.
You know? Exactly. Exactly. And through that, you just said something. I want to make them feel. Once you feel the change, then you're like, oh, I am the change. And now you start making decisions.
And now I'm Gandhi.
Exactly.
I am the change I want to see in this bitch.
Exactly.
Not sure he used that exact terminology.
I think you'll find if you go back and retranslate the original Indian, it does come out as, I will be the change this bitch I want to see. It's a subtle like adverb usage thing.
Chris has this habit of putting words in people's mouths. Even if they're not around.
My favorite pastime. Carl, I'm going to put things in your mouth. Word-wise. It's a joke. Everybody calm down.
We are at Princeton. We need to be careful.
Oh, yeah. I was saying earlier, it's more than likely I'm going to be one of those people you read about in the newspaper that get banned from a university.
Oh, like, God.
Oh, they let this guy speak one time, and then he said that thing.
Well, we're never coming back.
We should call some ruckus later. Let's go run around the quad or the what are the words they use for where the kids hang out?
The quad, maybe. I don't know.
That sounds cool.
Yeah. Let's take a break real quick. When we come back, we can actually talk about your book a little bit.
Let's do that.
Yeah.
This is Andrea Eger, and you're listening to Barbell Shrug. For the video version, go to barbellshrug.com.
Barbell Shrug is brought to you by you. To learn more about how you can support the show, go to barbellshrug.com and sign up for the newsletter.
Somebody add St. Carl's balls, please.
I actually keep a giant zip tie in my bag at all times.
Just for instances
just in
like
case.
This.
Just in case there's a pair of nuts you need to zip tie. Is that what you just said?
The community will not understand the context.
And we're
of this
back.
Intro.
We're trying to get back. We got talking. And every time we go on a break, the conversations never stop. Mm-hmm. And I feel bad. I'm like, no. We got to stop. We were talking about some things that. Because that's what happens. You get to the break, and then you start talking about the stuff you're really passionate about.
Mm-hmm.
And you were talking about coaches that are a little limited in their thinking that, you know, this is the only way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Because I've done this
right
for 30 years.
Mm-hmm. And it worked for me.
Yeah.
Totally. Especially gymnastics coaches and athletes. And I think there are some very good ones out there that are just amazing, and they've accomplished a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But you've only accomplished a lot in one lane.
Right.
And it's not teaching other people that are not in that lane what you've accomplished, but what the universal benchmarks that you hit were in terms of what was your mindset, mental, in terms of physical performance. What was it you did that really changed the game? Was it these positions? Was it this time that you spent holding those positions? Was it the kids that you were working with? What were those things? What were the elements?
Yeah.
That's the kind of stuff that needs to be transferable and transferred into other disciplines for it to matter. And that's not happening. People are just like, hey, it's my way or the highway. And if you're not doing it this way, you should not be doing it. You're doing it wrong.
I'm going to throw you under the bus.
Yeah, go for it.
Yeah, you said you had some beef with some things that Coach Sommer said when we had him on our podcast a while back, probably about 6 months ago. And
yeah.
And and admittedly, we had a hard time. Like, there was a lot of pressure. I felt a lot of pressure personally to try and direct the conversation to make it applicable, to
mm-hmm.
make it matter, and then also maybe defend CrossFit a little bit because he was
sure.
so aggressive. Negatively aggressive towards that.
You gotta fight to keep the balance.
I could tell that he didn't really grasp
mm-hmm.
what was going on outside of gymnastics.
Which
and that's kind of what you're talking about.
Yes. I feel like, unfortunately, that podcast, I had to turn it off like 15 minutes in because mm-hmm. I was just like, why someone that has so much experience feels the need to attack rather than to explain mm-hmm. and to open people's minds and eyes to things that they've discovered. And someone like Coach Sommer is amazing because I've followed that programming. I've done that programming.
Mm-hmm.
It took me a while to decipher it.
Me too. Yeah, I mean, I've done it as well. Yeah.
Right? And it's amazing. And if you just watch what he has accomplished in terms of even just YouTube videos of the kids doing the work that they're doing, that's amazing. And in order to get there, there needs to be some sort of artistry and mastery of a discipline.
It's everything we talked about before. Everything the
yes.
programming is not and has to be filled in, you know?
Amazing. Amazing. But as soon as you are attacking and judging and saying that something is wrong, I feel like there's something there that is slightly off. And I don't know if it's that maybe you don't see that there's physical transferability or that there's some sort of personal beef there that...
Right.
That we're not aware of.
Maybe a little both.
Maybe a little both.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Maybe
it's
mad beef.
But all I'm saying is that when I see that, immediately I tend to remove myself because I'm like, I know that this is a red flag in my opinion as a coach.
Mm-hmm.
Once I see that narrow mind come out, and it's just hard because it frustrates me knowing that the tools that someone like Coach Sommer has or anyone that's been in the gymnastics world for that long, those tools are so powerful.
Mm-hmm.
And when they're not actually transferred into other disciplines, I feel like they're underutilized. And it's almost like a detriment to the sport that I love, gymnastics.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is what gave me the foundation to what I'm doing right now.
Right.
should we put you on either side of a table with a Barbell Shrugged microphone between you and have the epic first edition of the Barbell Shrugged face-off?
I would love it. And you know what I think? How
two
it would
sides
end?
Of the coin, Sumner versus Belly.
No, but the thing is...
two men enter, one man leave.
It would end in a good way because we are speaking the same language. We're saying the same things. There's just something out there that is a little off. And that's where the problem of media comes in. It's like right now, probably people are listening and they're thinking, Carl's a douchebag.
You somebody know? Is.
And that's oh, fine. Yeah. But
somebody hates you.
Yeah, and that's totally fine. I get it. I hate myself sometimes too. And
is it an ice cream night? We go, I'm such a... Everybody thinks I'm so cute, but on the inside, I'm just a fat little 15-year-old girl who's shy.
What I always say is like, I'm just trying to figure this thing out, you know? I didn't invent any of this thing. I'm just talking about it. And... I'm trying to describe it to people. And I've had certain experiences in my life that I know have made me better. And I'm trying to relate those experiences to other people. And that's what I do as a coach. That's what I do as an athlete for myself. And that's what I think everyone should be doing. And once you get stuck in one way, it's just, you're just limiting yourself and everyone around you. And I think that's a problem, especially if you are at a high level, like some of the coaches that are coming in and some of the athletes that are coming in becoming coaches.
It's funny. I've had some coaches that have been around a long time, and I come from more of the weightlifting background, obviously. And I've gotten, you know, people have contacted me like that. It was like 2012, 2013 this year.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God, these CrossFitters! If I could teach them how to weightlift, they could get. I was like, that was like 5 years ago. Uh-huh. Like you missed the boat. Like we've been teaching. Like we've had like Olympic weightlifting coaches. Like there's nothing but weightlifting seminars going on 24/7.
Guys are snatching 300 pounds and then they're running 10Ks.
Gyms.
Well,
it's like you could bring something to the table and you should. I don't want to discourage it, but I think that you're going to revolutionize it at this point. Like the revolution already occurred.
Right.
People get it and people will come to your seminar, but that's what's going
to
happen.
Yes. Yeah. And you know, even to that point, barbell work in general is what CrossFit is actually anchoring themselves on. If you see the athletes, they're like, oh, when they go to the CrossFit games, all of a sudden they're like, when is CrossFit going to show up? What do you mean by CrossFit? Oh, yeah, anything with a barbell and some wall balls, right?
We lucked out on that one because we're good with barbells.
Totally. But I think the point
if it was gymnastics, if it was anchored in gymnastics, I'd be sitting on the sidelines watching.
CrossFit is stupid.
The question to ask is why barbell? Why the barbell? Why is the barbell the most effective way of developing strength, power, the physiological adaptations that you want? And how did it end up being that?
Well, I've got some answers for you.
Yeah, please. No, but that's
get ready for the bullshit.
That's where I want to go. Yeah. And that's where my conversation goes.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
the world is waiting for your answer right now.
Yeah, where's your answer?
Yeah, the barbell is extremely convenient for maximizing high force, you know. You can load the body heavier with a barbell than probably anything else.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can also, because it's so flexible and spins and stuff, you can also move it really fast.
Well, this is an essential tool for developing strength for how long now? At least 200 years, maybe?
It's easy to grab. Mm-hmm. And you can, you know, what other object are you going to be able to load up to 500 pounds and pull off the ground?
Right.
Well, as Mark always said, Mark, it's the only thing you can lift a lot, but you can also incrementally load. That's the whole point.
Yeah.
Incremental loading.
And so I'm interested to hear the other side of that.
No, but that's
what's the opposite
absolutely.
Side?
No, that's exactly what it is. And knowing that this is the most useful and effective tool to develop those things is very powerful. But knowing why and where it comes from is even more important. And who is actually manipulating the barbell and where that movement comes from is also important. Mm-hmm. And now it doesn't go just 200 years. Now we're talking back in the day when we were just picking stuff off the ground.
Right.
And now that we've had to create these, you know, artificial rooms to develop that to call gyms, right?
No, it definitely crossed my mind sometimes. I'm like, really good at picking up a barbell, pick up a log or a rock.
Yeah.
Might not be so good at that.
And you know, that's interesting. And that's something that I teach. I'm like, hey, here's your squatting mechanics. I ask people at my seminars. I'm like, hey, what does a perfect squat look like? And everyone's like, okay, feet flat on the ground. Most people say wear on their heels or whatever. They say toes slightly turned out, knees out, spine, you know, straight, whatever.
If you don't do that, you get cancer.
Exactly. And if I try to teach my dad how to squat, he's probably not going to look like that right away. When you were front squatting before, you probably didn't look like that.
I squatted like a guy who was taught to push the hips back, get the bar low, use as much weight as you can because that's what strong people do. Fuck CrossFitters, you know, all that stuff.
Exactly. So taking that concept of not front squatting or back squatting with a barbell, but taking the concept of just squatting and breaking that down as something progressive is something that we do as coaches, and that's very clear. But on the other side of things, there's our ability to build tools. And someone like Steve Jobs, especially coming from the Bay Area, there's an old interview with him where he was talking about Apple and his company, and one of the people in the audience asked him, so what kind of computers do you guys make? They're like, oh, wait a second, we don't make computers.
Asshole.
Exactly. And he started talking about efficiency in terms of animals moving from point A to point B, and they did all this testing, and apparently the condor came out number one in efficiency, and
it was energy efficiency.
Yeah, the human being came in like 36 or something. And then they tested again, but with the human being on a bicycle, and he came out number one with a huge margin. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And he said, one of the abilities that we have as human beings is to build tools to maximize our ability.
Right.
Boom, boom.
And this is where I think the barbell is one of those tools. It's like we've been able to build technology, a tool that allows us to maximize the way we naturally move. And I talk about this all the time. I'm like, it's a constant battle of how we move, skill versus tech. And in gymnastics, every 4 years, new equipment comes out. It's a more elastic, it's a little bit narrower, it's bouncier, and all of a sudden you can fit in an extra little piece there. And I think that's where the spinning of the barbell, and you're about to go visit with Liko, that's what they are doing.
Yeah. Well, don't tell people that. It's a secret.
Yeah.
No, I'm just kidding.
And you know how picky you get when you get a barbell and you're like, oh, this barbell sucks. It doesn't spin. It just, you know.
Oh, you know what? Yeah, in regard to the barbell spinning, it's funny because, yeah, that happens. I'm pretty spoiled. Had an Liko bar and a Worksound bar both for years now. Mm-hmm. And we travel a lot, so we're on other barbells. And every once in a while, I'm walking around the room trying to find the best one. Uh-huh. I walked into a gym one day, and they were all rusted. Like, no turnover at all.
Oh, my God. How am I going to train? I'm a weightlifter.
I still trained. I just couldn't go do as much weight, right? Perfect example. Uh-huh. I snatched, and it was about 25% less. Because mm-hmm. if I tried to do any more, I was probably going to hurt myself. But where was I going with that?
I'm sure you had a point, Mike. Take your time.
Tommy Kona. Tommy Kona. I was really fortunate to have read his book early in my weightlifting mm-hmm. career. And he talks about, he was in like the camps. He's Japanese. He was in the camps when he was a kid. Mm-hmm. Where they took all the Japanese folks in the United States. Yeah. They put them in these camps, and he was like practicing with broomsticks. He had barbells that were like completely rusted. Mm-hmm. He had the least likely to succeed conditions for being a weightlifter, but he trained hard anyway. I don't think he had like a non-rusted up barbell for years and years and years. And this dude wins. Mm-hmm. But seven? No, is that bodybuilding? He did bodybuilding and weightlifting.
He won both.
Yeah.
Mr. Universe and the Olympics. I want to say something like that.
Yeah, he was in the Olympics. He was a world champion weightlifter, world champion bodybuilder.
Amazing.
I was trying to think of the numbers. He won championships in weightlifting across several weight classes, like three or four. Mm-hmm. I bounced between these two. It's like he lost a lot of weight. Uh-huh. He gained some weight. And then with bodybuilding, it was incredible.
Amazing.
And this guy didn't have an Liko barbell. Mm-hmm. Anytime I walk in a gym and I'm like, that story runs through my head and I go, don't be an asshole.
Mm-hmm. Back in
just sometimes it's good to, I like training with different barbells. I mean, just having some that spin less than others is variety. Mm-hmm. Probably not enough variety for just GPP, but I try not to get too elite in my barbell selection.
Yeah, he's known for saying that you shouldn't use anything that will assist you in training. You shouldn't hook grip. You shouldn't use straps. You shouldn't use knee wraps. You shouldn't wear shoes. You shouldn't use a bar that's any good at all. That way, when you do go to compete or the weeks leading up to competitions, because you got to get used to the gear and whatnot, That way, when you get there, everything's that much easier because you haven't been using it as a crutch your whole training cycle leading up to your competition.
Yeah. That's an easy point. You need a mix. I talked with Lauren Chu, our buddy who's, haven't seen him in a long time, but he's a professor of biomechanics at the University of Alberta, and like a perfect score on GRE math, brilliant engineering type, who decided, no, I don't want to do physics, I want to do mechanics and weightlifting. And I was powerlifting at the time. We were training together. And powerlifting is so different than weightlifting because the last thing we want is nice shit sometimes. Like, like most of my bars at home are rusty and intentionally don't spin and are intentionally not flexible at all. You take a nice legal bar, you squat, you're going to get a pop at the bottom, you're going to stand up, it's going to feel, you know, very, it's going to be actively lifting with you. You can use that as a strategy to lift more. If you do that with a powerlifting squat bar, you'll go down and you're going to stay there because it's not going to rebound. It's going to bury you.
Right.
And it's a good thing that I think we talked to Lauren too. Like he said, one day, usually I go into the gym or warm up room at a meet, people will freak out over shit's different. Like this bar doesn't spin the way mine does. Oh fuck, I'm not going to make my opener. He's like, I always find the shittiest bar in any gym and lift on it intentionally. So it's always an upgrade. That makes me think the most important thing you can do.
CrossFit though, it was like the shittiest bar in a weightlifting gym.
Right.
No, but like we would go to a place where he would lift with like a just a power bar that wouldn't spin hardly at all, right. And he would just like I need to be able to lift with anything. And then if I can make it hard intentionally, and make myself uncomfortable, and also sometimes make it to where things are optimal, like to create the contrast again, then that's how I'm going to be the best lifter possible. I can't just always seek out the most efficient thing. The optimal shoes, the best bar, the best spot to train, because that's not what really strong people have ever done. It's not fucking what any guy who's ever lifted a huge amount of weight, they've always done it because they were super uncomfortable for a long time and things weren't optimal.
Equipment selection is usually like the not one of the first things on someone's mind who's an elite level athlete. So
yeah,
I was lifting at a elite in one of the illegal booths at a conference like 10 years ago, and Tommy Kona was there just hanging out watching, and I went over to lift and I just grabbed the bar with my hook grip and just pulled and then started to walk away. And he was like, if you've ever met Tommy Cohn, he's older now because he won those competitions back like in the 50s. And so, you know, old, very polite Japanese man. And he kind of shuffles over there and he's like, son or whatever he called me. And he was like, come over here. And he shows me in very great detail how to hook grip. And he's like, you know, just grab the bar and pull on it. Like he went through like a 5 or 10 minute explanation of like, you wrap your thumb and then the first finger and then the second finger and then the third finger. And then you have your perfect grip. And then he showed me again. And it was like, you ever seen like Jiro Dreams of Sushi? Sushi guy like is like really like
that's amazing.
Super into making like the best possible piece of sushi that there ever possibly could be. And he'll never get there. He's trying to achieve mastery. I felt like that's how Tommy Kona was when he was showing me how to hook grip. Something so simple, you think you just reach around the bar and grab it. But it was like that level of perfection that you don't get from other people.
He's like, you're hook gripping, son, but you're not hook gripping. Like you hear Jimmy, but you're not fucking listening to Jimmy when he's playing guitar, you know what I'm saying?
Well, that's what this whole thing is about. And if we can just put coaches and athletes in that place where it's a reality check and you're just like, oh, why do I like the barbell this way? Okay. Now we can keep moving forward. Why do I like to squat this way? Can I squat different? Can I change those things? How do I change that without messing everything I know up and still staying on target? And that's just hard, but it's helpful.
There's something that rings true in all the progressions, like if I may elegantly and timely switch focus to your book. But the point was raised, like one thing I love about your book, dude, is that I've seen people talk about progressions and I've seen all kinds of ways you can say, do this, now we're going to do this. It's harder. Master that and then do that.
Right.
It's always a kind of a cold clicking, like not very elegant approach. When you look in your book, one, the design, dude.
Thank you.
Fucking home run, dude. That's the first thing. The design of your book is, it feels like a textbook. It's super heavy. It's super, like the quality is there, but it reads like a graphic novel of explanation of movement. Like there's a lot of pictures that you go from the very essential elements of what a toddler would do to what a high lifter squatter would do. And every kind of squat in between, it elegantly moves from point A to point B, and there's no like weird tangents. You're not shoving in a necessary thing. Each thing builds elegantly. If this, then this, and if you can do that, then these things become an option.
That was the intention. And first of all, the design, of course, we had input in it, but we had two amazing designers, Nick D'Amico and Ryan Smith, aka Smitty. They were just phenomenal on taking what I had in my brain and laying it down. And then my co-author, he's a genius. He's like PhD neuroscience. Engineer, startup dude, done a lot of stuff.
Very
smart guy, helped me organize this in a way where the craziness in my head could actually be laid out nicely on paper. And so thank you, first of all. And second is that people that read the book are probably going to be like, wait a minute, he didn't really tell me to do anything. He just explained what I'm asking myself as I'm doing it. And some people don't like that. People like recipes. Give me the recipe. Give me the secret sauce.
Yeah. But, not how it works, folks.
But the cool thing I think about the book and what I'm hoping people get out of it is that when they go through it, they're like, oh, here are some recipes. And as I went through the recipes, by the end of it, if I actually practice them, I will actually have learned not how to make that recipe, but how to cook. And that's what we're trying to do as coaches. I can teach you some techniques.
It's like you learn how to fish. You can then go out and hear somebody explain something, go, based on understanding, I could then take that and move that forward.
Exactly.
You can't do that if you're just copying shit.
Exactly.
Yeah, I think, you know, people kind of talking about transferability. You learn those things about the human body and how it's supposed to move, mm-hmm. and all this stuff. And now you can go to any sport and perform relatively well. You know, if you learn how the body's just supposed to move optimally, like the first day I went out to throw a shot put or a disc, they were like, mm-hmm. oh, that's pretty good. And I was like, mm-hmm. it's like, well, I kind of understand like loading of the hips and releasing and all this. And they're like, oh, we just know how to do the techniques.
That's
and it's
cool.
Like, and it's like, well, not that I'm tuning my horn too loud because I go do yoga and I look like shit. So
we're not all perfect.
Just trying to be.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Well, yeah, that's cool. I mean, that's what it's all about, just really understanding why we do what we do and how we can do it, and understanding that, you know, techniques that are taught in yoga and gymnastics and weightlifting, powerlifting, whatever it is, are good techniques. But what are they a product of, and how are they benefiting us? And that's where the mastery really comes into play, where you're like, okay, I have all these tools. How do I use them to communicate? And that's where they're like, oh, you know, shot put, for example. I've never done it, but most likely if they taught me, I would be decent after a little bit. Could I throw far? No, because I'm a little guy, not very strong, but I'll probably learn the movement pattern mm-hmm. fairly quickly.
You'll see what jives between that and gymnastics and weightlifting in terms of like how one uses their hand to mm-hmm. move an implement for max distance efficiently. That shit doesn't change.
Exactly, you know? Exactly. And I think that's what's so powerful about the type of coaches that the strength and conditioning world is really showcasing, and it's that people that come with the expertise or discipline that's completely foreign to maybe our skill set, we're able to improve them and help them simply by speaking the language of movement. But it's not just the language of movement, it's understanding the progression of movement yeah. and what those principles are, really.
I find that like gymnasts tend to move really well compared to other athletes. Mm-hmm. You know, people who grew up in gymnastics just kind of, they take on other sports really easily.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I were to have a kid and I wanted to, if I wanted to have them raise them in optimal movement and all that kind of stuff, would you suggest putting them in a traditional gymnastics program? Or If you were to have like a kid from birth, mm-hmm. how would that, what would be your suggestion for teaching them?
Send them to a gymnastics camp in China where they hang
yes,
at their
exactly.
peril?
Yes, exactly. That's all you should do. No, I think gymnastics is a great foundation for all sports. And I think, depending if you're a man or a woman, but men don't really mature until they're like 30.
But
says
still
you.
Debatable.
Still debatable.
I'm 32.
Me
and
too. And
my
I
wife
still
would probably,
it out.
Yeah, get in an argument. Yeah.
But for girls, I think, you know, when they hit 14, they have such a solid foundation if they've done it since they were 5, 6.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, it's like, what do you want to do? Do you want to do track and field? Do you want to do some Olympic weightlifting? Do you want to play right. some, you know, sports? Let's do that. I think that is a great foundation, especially the way the female gymnastics is approached.
Yeah, because female gymnastics is, that sport's like completely different than male gymnastics.
It is. It's not completely different, but it is very different.
Yeah.
You know,
certainly higher profile.
Yeah, exactly. If you think about the CrossFit Games, for example, you don't see a lot of male gymnasts going in there.
Right.
And the reason that I have kind of come to a conclusion is because men's gymnastics has 6 events. Out of those 6 events, 4 of them are upper body dominant.
Mm.
2 of them are lower body dominant. For the girls, they have 4 events where 3 of them are lower body dominant, 1 upper body dominant.
Mm-hmm.
Then for the men, it's like, okay, 70% strength, like you can power through a lot of this stuff, 30% skill in terms of your ability to move, even though that's changing a lot, okay? And don't quote me on that, but it's...
We're going to quote you on this.
Yeah, exactly. And then for the girls, it's more 70% skill in terms of movement ability, and then 30% strength, like that raw strength.
But then there's like high, super high impulses and forces when they're vaulting and fucking landing. Like that's got to be, I don't know. How did they do that shit, Carl? Well, how do you do that?
The mats are pretty forgiving, and you know, you progressively load up to it. I mean, if you were to do it at the age of 18 for the first time, you're snap your ankles. But because you started when you were 4, well, you progressively loaded up to it.
I feel like you were building to like this big, awesome point, and then we fucking switched.
You did, but it's okay. I'm going to get to it right now.
This is the show.
The girls, what happens is that because they've created this ability to move, this skill ability that's well-rounded, and that's what they focus on in order to perform at the highest level, they're able to take that movement ability, almost that blanket and capacity that they develop, and apply it into other things with more ease. And then strength is something that's a little more linear in terms of the way that you can progress it.
Yeah.
That physiologic adaptation. You kind of know how to do that. But movement is hard, especially when you come in late. So if you're 18, 19, haven't been moving much, learning at that age is actually harder. But the girls come in and they have more. The guys, if you've seen them, if you look at my legs are very skinny. I have sticks for legs. So going in to something like CrossFit, which is very lower body dominant in terms of creating power, we're behind.
You don't want a big build legs because where are you going to get your jeans? You can't get those skinny jeans if you start squatting too much.
But they're elastic, you know?
I bought some elastic jeans last year. They lasted a month.
Because you were too, the gains them? Came too quickly?
The right in the crotch area, the thighs. It almost,
the balls?
Pretty much started a fire when I was walking.
Oh, you know? God.
Crotchfire.com. Well, you know,
it was from walking. It wasn't from anything else.
Oh, my God.
All that redness down there wasn't because your thighs are rubbing together.
The point you make.
Something else going on.
Carl's point about there's a window. And once it closes, you can always be strong. You can improve. But certain qualities aren't going to be developed. And I think for me in powerlifting, my strength was always the thing. It was never about movement quality, and it was never about the ability to rapidly, like mechanically in a sound way, reverse a load. It's like I never like jump off a thing and land it with good mechanics because no one's paying attention to that. Like a gymnast would jump and land perfectly, and also this huge impulse, a huge spike of force, and they can stay mechanically sound and reverse it into stand. How's a guy military press 300 pounds? He fucking shoves it up. But how's a guy beautifully jerk 500? He dips, and with perfect mechanics, he can rapidly like stop the movement of the weight, make the bar wrap around him, and he flicks it off of him, and it goes on its own. That's something I can never do because I never worked that quality. And that window closes, and you can get better, but you're never going to be Ilian Ilya who just tosses 400 pounds over his head and catches it. The window closes, man.
And you don't want to say that you're too late for the game. You're never completely too late. You're maybe not going to make it to the Olympics, but that doesn't mean you can't constantly improve on your ability to move. And that's another message that I want to send is that I want people to continue moving for as long as possible. I'm hoping that I'm going to live until I'm 110. I don't know if that will happen, but I want to live for a long time. And I'm sure you don't want to hear that, hey, you know what? In 2-3 years, you're not going to be squatting. Yeah. You're not going to be doing the stuff that you love right now.
No.
Yeah, I've definitely shifted recently to training for health and movement versus like just trying to get, you know, pushing the performance as far as possible.
Exactly.
So I woke up, you know, several days, maybe a couple years in a row. Oh, this hurts. So now I wake up pain-free.
Totally.
Because the method of training is different. The mentality is different.
But that's what allows progress to continue. You can't just keep beating yourself up. Like now, like you can. In many ways, you're much better.
I still hit PRs, but the focus is on the movement.
Yeah, as you get old, you can't just keep doing things the same old way. As you change and the world changes, you got to switch your point of view, man.
Yeah, eventually, you know, your movement will produce the numbers, but you can't be chasing the numbers. Especially when you're over 30.
It's kind of
weird.
Of saying.
It kind of happens the same way with everybody. They hit 30 for dudes. It's like, hit 30. Now I got to do things properly.
What's wrong with me? I actually have to try.
It's like people when I was 25, I was like, you know, you should probably try a different way. I was like, this fucking works.
Shut up.
They're like, oh, it'll work today.
Right.
And then that shoulder is going to like really be fucked up. Yeah. All right, Ray, wrap this up.
I am.
Got anything
dude.
You
want to
promo? Where can we find you on the Instagrams?
Well, Instagram, of course, Carl Powley. That's the easy one. Twitter, the same thing. Freestyle the Book. Dot com. That's a big one.
We do recommend that book. Yeah. Keep it on hand. Refer to it.
Where would you prefer people buy that book from?
You know, Amazon is so easy, but always supporting your local stores is a great thing to do. It's at every Barnes & Noble in the country, which is great. And but any independent store is awesome, especially if you go in there and they don't have it and you just place the order through them. Mm-hmm. They always appreciate that, and that's just a big one. So supporting that local store is
definitely
something that I'm trying to do a lot.
And if you're a gym owner, can you buy it wholesale? Like buy 100 and sell it at your box?
Definitely. And I highly recommend it because it's, you know, one of those things that, one, I put a lot of effort into it, but I know that it's going to be beneficial for a lot of coaches, and they will appreciate it. It's one of those things you can just pick up, look at. It's really quick. And for those that want to dig in a little deeper, there's a lot of nitty gritty and stuff.
Maybe we can set up a deal where people can click on something and get a deal on a batch of books and easily order, and we can get them involved.
Anything for you guys.
Let's do it.
Thank you.
Awesome. Thanks for joining us. Make sure you go to barbellshrug.com.
Mm-hmm. This is Barbell Shrug.
So many barbells.
Right.
That's what we do here. Yeah.
Barbellshrug.com. Sign up for the newsletter, and we'll keep you up to date. What's going on? Later.
Thanks, Carl. Man.
Thank you. Thank you.